Lights, camera, action.
And the winner is...
Welcome back to the Oscar Real Movie Podcast, just in time for Haley to yawn.
I'm not yawning.
Okay. It's 8:30.
I mean, I was, but...
Welcome back to the Oscar Real Movie Podcast, where we discuss movies, sometimes comics, but today, we got a great show for you. We're back to basics. We've got a Best Picture breakdown. It's the 1962 Oscar-winning movie, Lawrence of Arabia. We also watched the supposed runner-up that year in To Kill a Mockingbird and review both of them, talk about which one should have won Best Picture. So that's the main theme of the episode. But first, as always, I am your host, Matthew Schmidt, joined my co-host and beautiful wife, Haley Schmidt.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Good, good, good. Well, you're working right now and I'm not. I spent all day with the little man.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Sounds like you guys had a good time.
Driving around, bringing them to where I work, going to the library. There's a little slide at the library that he just loves climbing and sliding down himself.
So cute.
He thinks he's just so the biggest, cute. He's like the best kid in the world, just climbing up that thing and sliding down it. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fun stuff.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what we've been doing. But... what have you been watching, reading, or etc.?
I'd say probably my most recent obsession in terms of what I'm watching is Jeopardy. I've been watching Jeopardy pretty much every day.
Yeah, when did the Jeopardy kick happen for you? Like, recently. You watched it a lot growing up?
I would say I watched it pretty much every day after school growing up, like with my mom.
I felt like in the last couple months or year... it's really...
so I started watching it when Aaron Rodgers hosted. I watched those full 2 weeks, and you watched most of those episodes, too, with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of those things, like, the person who was, like, the reigning champion at the end of Aaron's week, I was like, oh, I like this person. I just want to keep watching and, like, see how far they go. I had seen Matt Amodio's first episode that he won, and didn't think anything of it. We didn't watch for like a couple of weeks. But then I just happened to catch the end of it. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's still on. He's in like double digit days. He lasted however many days, 30 something days. And then the person who beat him ended up being on for like 15 days. And they've had these huge winners that have had these really long streaks. And then over Thanksgiving, my mom and I were watching. And there was a woman on, and so now I've been watching her, and she just won her 21st consecutive game today. So, lots of consecutive winners. So, it's one of those things, like, it's just kind of fun to have on and feel like I'm smart for a little bit. So,
yeah,
I got the final Jeopardy question right today, so that was exciting.
You deserve some of that money.
Right? Oh, I wish. But anyways, yeah, that's been my obsession lately, is watching Jeopardy every day.
Nice.
And then I just restarted, I started re-watching a show that you and I have watched all the way through. It's on Apple TV. So for those of you who've already watched Ted Lasso, here's your next one to watch.
I think it's better than Ted Lasso.
It is better than Ted Lasso, in a different way. But yeah, it's called Trine, and it's about this couple that live in a London neighborhood, and they had troubles conceiving a child, and so they end up deciding to adopt, and it's kind of their process through the whole adoption thing and just kind of figuring out their relationship and dealing with their crazy friends and family. It's so heartfelt. I feel like it's a really realistic portrayal of just like navigating your relationship while trying to like add to your family, and it's really funny and it's really good.
Definitely. Very good show. I guess first off, Book of Boba Fett started today,
mm-hmm.
First episode. So I watched that. It was pretty good. I don't think it was like as good as either of the first episodes of Mandalorian, but it's setting up some stuff. It's a little bit of a slow burn of an episode, but it and it was shorter than I thought it would be, it's still pretty good though. I love the new TV Star Wars content, so it's great stuff. Mm-hmm. The big thing I was trying to, I checked out the Witcher book, the first, it's like the first in the series, but the third one published, Blood of Elves. Checked it out the library, and I was rushing to read it before the due date at the library, so I read 400 pages in a week or so. Because the new season of the show is out, so I was trying to read the book before I started the show. So that's kind of what my kick has been lately, which I love fantasy stuff, like the whole world building aspect of The Witcher is awesome, and the show is really good. I'm kind of trying to prep myself to play the video game, Witcher 3, because it's considered to be one of the best video games of all time. It's like 100.
Wait, is it out already?
Oh, yeah, it came out like, is 10 years ago wrong?
Let me see. No, for real?
It's old. 10 years is probably 2015. So it came out in 2015. 6 years ago.
Yeah.
If you round up, that's 10, so close enough, maybe.
That's true.
But it won Game of the Year, won a bunch of awards, is considered one of the best video games of all time. It's an open world game, kind of like Ghost of Tsushima, that I really liked. So it's just, you wander around and do all these missions. So I'm going to love it. I'm just, it's like 170 or 180 hours of game.
Ooh.
If you do everything. Which, that's a lot. Which I do.
Yeah, you do like doing every little mission.
I'm going to hate love it. You know, like I'm going to love it, but be like, God damn, I've been playing this for so long.
Kind of like being with me. You love it and you hate it.
No. I thought you were going to say parent. Kind of like being a parent. I thought you were going to go that route.
Sure.
No, I love being with you all the time, every minute of every day, all the time for the rest of our lives, for 12 years and forever. Love it.
Okay, good.
There we go. So I've been doing a lot of Witcher stuff, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So
yeah,
that's been my life lately.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, good Christmas. This is our first episode since Christmas happened. Yeah. Any highlights of the Christmas season?
We watched a lot of Christmas movies. We just watched a lot of movies in general, which I love. I love having the free time to just sit and stay in your jammies. And we watched some Christmas classics. We watched Christmas Vacation.
Some not-so-classics, too,
Family
that are good.
Stone.
Say, that's one that, like, I don't think people would consider a Christmas classic.
I love watching the Family Stone.
Here's your floor to recommend Family Stone to people.
Yes, I love the Family Stone. It's really good. This is a little fun fact I told you. I'm pretty sure that's the only movie I've ever seen in the front row, which is such a random movie to see in the front row. Which is one of those things, like, it was in a really, really small theater, and my aunt and I just happened to be one of the last ones there, I guess. So, sat in the front row, and now we think of each other anytime we watch it.
It's about a messed up family that are messed up in the sense of they're kind of shitty to a person in the movie, who in themselves is kind of
a
shitty person, too. Yeah.
So. But they're quirky.
Oh, that's a spin. Positive spin word.
Yeah, yeah. There's kind of a quirky mishmash of people. But yeah, no, it's a cute movie. I like that one. We went to the theater and saw a few movies. So that was fun with your brother and sister. I always like going to movies with them.
Yep, rewatched Spider-Man in IMAX.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in IMAX. That was cool.
Yep. I got you a Roomba.
Yes, and I've been using it like every day. I love it.
Like, which room should I clean now? Let me put it in this room. Six minutes later, it's done. Oh, my God.
Ooh, what should I do next? What needs to be cleaned next? I know. As I sit here, I can see a little trail from the Roomba across the carpet.
You clean nerd, you.
That is accurate. 100%.
All right.
I wish there were other, like, automated things like that for cleaning. I mean, I get a lot of joy out of physically cleaning things. Like, that's like a stress release in a way. But it's also really nice just having something else do the cleaning for you.
Need a self-cleaning toilet.
Yes, that would be cool.
Right? That's got to be a not fun thing to clean.
You say it like that because you...
did it professionally?
Very rarely clean
toilets
in our house.
Professional toilet cleaner over here. working as a bartender at the golf course, I had to clean those toilets.
Okay.
I just don't like bringing my work home with me.
Oh my God.
I don't like cleaning toilets at home when I did it, you know, professionally.
Professionally.
Yep. Got paid to do it.
It's true.
Professional.
It's true.
So, not much of a trailer park or news section this week. There's not a lot of new stuff out there. I mean, there was a new trailer for Uncharted and a new trailer for the Batman. But we've talked about both of those movies on here already. And I don't know, like, the Batman one, yeah, I'm more excited to see it. I just want to see it at this point.
There's a lot more Zoe Kravitz, Catwoman action
in
this
one. I think the trailer is labeled The Bat and the Cat, so yeah.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
So it was just like, yeah, there's going to be more.
And I coined the new name, Robat Batten Cat.
That was great. Yeah, shout out Mr. Sunday Movies, Robat Batten Bat, which...
Robat Batten
they
Cat.
They willed that into fruition with him
using
a bat in the movie, which is hilarious.
So here's adding my little spin to it.
Exactly. So I'm more excited for that movie. I just want to see it at this point though. And then
when's it come out? March or April?
Uncharted. Oh, I want to. Let's see, Batman.
I feel like it's March 4th, and that's why I'm thinking. Oh, the 4th is it April? Fourth month. I don't know. I want to say it's March. What do you think, Toby?
March 4th is what Toby thinks, and he is correct.
Yay! So am I.
And so are you. And then with Uncharted, the trailers are to the point where I think that it's just the movie. Like, Sony's notorious for just releasing the movie in their trailer. And that's why Marvel, with all the Spider-Man stuff, has to, like, toe the reins and be like, no, you're not allowed, like, you know, where it is. So, like, Sony wanted to put in a bunch of more stuff in the No Way Home trailers, and Marvel had to be like, no. So they're kind of back to putting everything in the, like, I'm still going to see it because I like the video games, but the trailer is literally everything. It's, here's how the characters meet. And it ends with him finding the treasure, the giant ships, and then being like, how are they going to get the ships out of the cave? And normally maybe you'd leave that as a teaser.
Sure.
But no, they just show it in the trailer where the bad guys have these, like, helicarriers, and they like strap the ship up and then fly it out of there. I'm like, oh, cool. Well, there you go.
Okay.
I would be very surprised if
there's
isn't
anything new in
the
movie.
Exactly. So yeah, I guess less thrilled to see that, but I will still see it. Yeah, news, it's nothing much. What's his name? Peter Dinklage came out and said he's done talking about Game of Thrones because people are still complaining about the last season.
I saw a quote from him earlier this week that was like, I don't know, guys, it's fiction. There's dragons in it.
Which,
move on.
My retort, if I may say, is every movie is fiction.
Yeah, true.
People love certain things. Don't bash people for it.
Yeah, I think...
And I get, like, this has turned into, like, more than a passionate debate. It's more of a... people are just mad about it. But it was that bad. I'm sorry. Some people defend that last season. It was that bad. It was so bad these guys lost their Star Wars job. They rushed this final season to just get to their Star Wars movie and then lost it because this was so bad. And I get like...
See,
what's,
kids,
what's
stay
Peter
in school.
What is that? What?
Similar concept, right?
Stay in school versus...
don't rush through anything, just get to the next thing.
Oh, right.
I don't know. Whatever.
I get why he would say this, because, like, what else would he say? But at the same time, this was, like, the biggest show on the planet, and they completely fucked that final season.
Yeah.
Like, people cared. Mm-hmm. This is what happened. So anyways, so that's pretty much all I had for news and trailers. So we can just get into the Lawrence of Arabia breakdown. And then followed by, you know, we talk about To Kill a Mockingbird and then debate which one should have won Best Picture. And then we will end the show with a little old segment that we used to do. I'm going to try to do it more often. A little 6 degrees of separation. We're going to pick a couple movies and then we're going to connect them all via actors and movies. So get ready for that.
Yeah. I feel very out of practice. I hope I can, like, turn in my movie brain.
It's like riding a bike. You just got to start pedaling and you'll figure it out.
Yep. Sounds good.
right. Haley, shall we move on to our featured film of the podcast? Does that make it sound professional and good?
I think so.
All right. Featured film of the podcast, Lawrence of Arabia.
Does our dog huffing and puffing in the background make us sound professional?
Or is it a pig? Because he sounds like a pig most of the time, digging for truffles. Oh, all right. Let's talk about Man Wanders Through the Desert for 3.5 to 4 hours.
Yes. Would you like me to run through the nominees?
And yes, tell us about the film. Tell us about it.
Okay, so nominated for 14 Oscars. It won 7.
Could have been 15. We'll get to that.
Yes, you are correct. I'll rattle these off real quick. Won Best Picture, Best Director, Cinematography for Color, Art Decoration for Color, Best Sound, Best Film Editing, Best Score. Was also nominated Best Actor for Peter O'Toole, Supporting Actor for Omar Sharif, also nominated for Screenplay. Kind of an interesting note on the screenplay, too. Robert Bolt was the only one who was originally nominated for the award. It wasn't until 1995 that they found Michael Wilson had also contributed to the script, but he had been blacklisted
at
the
time. Well, they knew. Like, they knew Michael Wilson had worked on it.
So,
like, he did the first draft. I had that on here to talk about, too, so we could just talk about it now.
Sure,
if you want. So,
I'm just going off a little note here on IMDb, so maybe you know.
Okay. More. I mean, he was blacklisted for the same reasons. You saw the movie with Walter White, Bryan Cranston, Trumbo. Mm-hmm. Yes. It was the same thing that was going on there where... Yeah. If you accused anyone of being a communist, they were blacklisted, weren't allowed to work anymore. And I don't know the full extent of Michael Wilson, right?
Yes.
In, what, 95? Like, he's 17 years after he died, so cool.
Ooh, wow.
Good on them, I guess. Yeah. They gave him the credit. But David Lean and Robert Bolt, they kind of, I don't want to say fought it, because I don't know how much they push back on it, but they're very adamant that, like, no, like, this is Robert Bolt's script. He did all the dialogue, and we'll get into that. And they were trying to write off Michael Bolt, but the Writers Guild decided that he...
Michael Wilson.
That he had... What did I say?
Michael Bolt.
Same thing. Put them together. They're the same person. They're the same person. But yeah, they determined he had contributed enough, because he wrote the first draft. Like, basically, like, okay. He did the first draft of the movie... And it was decided that there wasn't enough dialogue in it, so they brought Robert Bolt in, who is a playwright, so heavy dialogue. So yeah. He basically wrote all of the dialogue in the movie.
Okay.
But all the characters and everything was written by Michael Wilson. So probably deserved it.
Yeah.
David Lean and Robert Bolt, I don't know, maybe it's a little, no, what we did is good, don't tell us any different, but not great that they weren't trying to include. That it?
I felt like I
cut you off, so I want to make sure you didn't have more to say.
Nope.
Okay, gotcha. So 1962 epic, like, this is like the epic that you probably people would think of. If you say epic film, what comes to mind? Maybe like a Ben-Hur, a Lawrence of Arabia. Yeah, yeah. This is one of the heavy hitters when it comes to that. Directed by David Lean, who had won Best Picture, Director, all that jazz for Bridge on the River Kwai, which we previously reviewed on here, so go back and listen if you want. And that was in 1957, so I think this was the next film he made, so a big break in between, which he did a lot. Like, he didn't knock out movies one after another. This he kind of took breaks between, mainly because most of his movies, probably mainly because most of his movies were big epics set in exotic locations, so it just took a while to make them. This movie, for it was 14 months of shooting, which, a little trivia for you, the shooting of this movie took longer than
the events
movies based on. So
one of my favorite things, you probably saw this in some of the trivia, but Peter O'Toole says they had to do some reshoots, and the scene that they had to do involved him, like, walking down a staircase, and he said he was a full year older once he makes it to the bottom of the staircase based on, like, the timing of the reshoots.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like you said, it took him a while to get through it. Also, if I can correct myself, they did win 7 Oscars, but they were only nominated for 10. I said 14.
You did, yeah, you did say 14.
Yeah. Yeah, so 7 out of 10.
Pretty good. Could have been 7 out of 11, which we hinted
there
at.
There we go.
At least this is what I had written down. They failed to write in the costume designer's name in time for recognition. Do you have more on that? You'd think costume design for this would be a home run. I'd have to look to see what actually won that year.
Yeah, but they forgot to submit Phyllis Dalton for her costume design.
Typical men. Well, or is Phyllis a guy? What's the name? Phyllis?
Dalton.
Dalton. Dalton Trumbo.
But maybe that plays into the fact that this is the longest movie with 0 speaking roles for women.
And as far as I know, the only Best Picture winner.
Most likely.
Other than silent films. No speaking lines.
Yes.
Right?
No speaking lines for anyone.
Which, how do you feel about that?
It's one of those things that, based on events of his life, it makes sense that there weren't any. You know, in the military, there weren't going to be any women in the military back then. It is weird. I mean, not like what he was doing anyway. It is a little strange that of the Arab nations and, tribes that he runs into, there are 0 women. I don't know if it's because they're somewhat nomadic groups or some of them are more militant that maybe there aren't, but there are almost no women present ever in the entire movie.
No.
There's a train crash. I don't
remember. With civilians.
Civilians. And you're how many women were even on that train? Did we see anyone? I don't know. So stuff like that, it's kind of weird to think about.
And it's weird. Cause,
but it didn't stand out to me as I was watching it.
Yeah, because even Bridge on the River Kwai, which is another war movie, there's female speaking roles in that movie, but there's not a lot of leading ladies or even supporting women in that. So I don't know if it's a David Lee, but then a movie he made later in life, Passage of India, the lead, it's about a woman who accuses someone of a horrible act. So in that case, it's a lead. But I mean, that was made 20 years after Lawrence of Arabia. But I don't know. I don't think it was really a David Lean thing he was trying to do it on purpose or anything like that. I think it's just a circumstance of, it's the middle of the desert.
Circumstance, that's a good word.
Yeah, it's the middle of the desert. It's a war-ish film. It is, it's a war film. And like you said, in the military, probably not a lot of women back then. And if they were nurses, and there's not a lot of medical nurse things happening in this film.
No.
So probably just a circumstance of what it's about. Could they have made up some love interest for Lawrence or someone like that? Sure, but would you have wanted it?
No.
No.
I mean, if it weren't true, then no.
Yeah, well, I mean, that happens all the time in films, right? You make up a love story. Titanic.
That's not a good one.
That didn't happen, right?
That is a completely different thing. Jeez.
Fair. This is just the first thing that popped in my head. Yeah, probably. Not great when you just say it, oh, no women speaking roles or lines.
Yeah.
But, when you really think about it, probably not that egregious. Could there have been something? Sure. But, they would have been taking liberties with it, probably.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, let's get, I guess, if you don't know what Lawrence of Arabia is about, it's, here's the Rotten Tomatoes description. Due to his knowledge of the native Bedouin tribes, British Lieutenant T.E. Lawrence, played by Peter O'Toole in his first role, we'll get to that too, is sent to Arabia to find Prince Faisal, Alec Guinness, and serve as a liaison between the Arabs and the British in their fight against the Turks. With the aid of native Sharif Ali, played by Omar Sharif, Lawrence rebels against the orders of his superior officer and strikes out on a daring camel journey across the harsh desert to attack a well-guarded Turkish port. So that's the entire...
That's a good description.
It is. So. It's just funny. That's literally just the first hour. That is Aqaba, right? Is it Aqaba? That's just literally Aqaba. There's a whole 2 hours after that happens, which is kind of funny or interesting.
Honestly, when I think of the movie, that's kind of where my mind like stops is like after the thing at Aqaba. I don't know why, but that's just.
Do you think it could have been shorter? Because I agree. Like, I think most of the, I don't want to say good parts, because the whole movie is good. I do like this movie. Yeah. But a lot of the memorable or more intriguing parts that I like are basically up to Aqaba.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, it does kind of slow down a little bit for me.
It's like, it's a more ingenious thing. I don't know how much we want to, like, kind of start from the beginning and talk through his whole journey. Yeah. But, you know, it was a pretty novel idea to say, hey, here's this port city, Aqaba. They're totally prepared to protect their seaport, but no one has attacked them from the desert because no one can cross the desert. Well, we're going to do it. Like, that's ingenious. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's just doing something no one's done before. Yeah. It's intriguing. Yeah.
So.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, we can start at the beginning a little bit. Well, first off, Rotten Tomatoes is 93% for both critics and audience.
Okay.
I'm a little surprised by the audience, only because this is a very old, not very old, it's an older film from the early 60s, and I think movies pre-1970 can be tough for freaking millennials, those millennials out there.
Just want their cell phones.
They give me the Marvel movies. I want the Marvel movies. Really, I think movies before the 70s can be a little tougher to digest.
Agreed. I will be the first person to say that. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm a little surprised that it's 93% for audience, but it is considered a classic. Mm-hmm. So I guess I can't argue too much with that. The budget was $15 million. Box office was $70 million. So pretty good return there. $15 million seems like a lot for the 60s. So, I mean, it was. I mean, they're on location, and there's how many extras in this movie, so I guess it shouldn't be too surprising if it's a little bit on the higher side, but there you go. And then on IMDb, it's an 8.3 out of 10, which puts it at, is it in the top 250? Oh, it's number 102. So yeah, there you go. But yeah, at the beginning of the film, it actually starts with the end of his life. So the opening credits are is literally just him getting a motorcycle ready after the war, like later in life. Gets in an accident, and yeah, he dies in a motorcycle accident. So yeah, he died in 1935, and he was 46 years old. So the rest of the movie is, I guess, somewhat of a flashback. And you're immediately, it's set up that he's kind of a controversial figure. He had a funeral in St. Paul's Cathedral, which is where kind of higher end people in London or England where, you know, where funerals are held, like Winston Churchill's funeral was there, a couple dukes. And so it's initially set up like, did he deserve this? Is he that good of a guy? And, you know, the same person tells the reporter he was a great man, a poet, a hero, and then when the reporter turns away, the same guy says, and what is he, the greatest exhibitionist since Barnum and Bailey, basically saying he's kind of a fraud or fake, or he, you know, he was a fake guy, and then flashes back to his first station in Cairo, his, you know, his journey to, he's assigned to find Prince Faisal, who's Alec Guinness, and just kind of report back. And he's chosen because he's book smart, speaks different languages, things like that. And it's kind of alluded to, people don't like him, so they kind of just want him out of the, out of the, not camp, but like out of their
station or whatever. Yeah.
So he gets sent out, meets Omar Sharif, finds Prince Faisal, and then starts kind of immediately going against his superior officer who's already with Prince Faisal, and giving advice to him. Not based on what's best for Britain, but what's best for Arabia. So he's going against British command and telling Prince Faisal, this is what I legit think is better for you.
Mm-hmm.
Which some could read into as being a good thing, but it's going against command. So he was kind of viewed as not a traitor, but as, you know, like, what are you doing? Kind of, you're going against, not rules, but going against,
Orders,
that's the word I was having trouble with.
Yeah.
So, the movie's multiple battles or things that happen. The first one's Aqaba. So Aqaba is kind of this key location for shipping, I think, that would really help out the British and Arabian side, but the Turks control it. And he decides to attack Aqaba against British orders and attack from the land, because that, like you said, it's a port. See, but all the guns face the water and they can't be turned around, so yeah, they have to cross this giant desert to do it. They eventually do, and a big thing in this movie too is Arabia's full of multiple tribes of Arabians, mm-hmm. and they're all kind of fighting against each other. They don't have a unified goal or leader, and Lawrence brings them together to kind of to fight as one. So that's kind of the other angle of the film, and it kind of it goes through, you know, World War One. It goes through multiple battles. Lawrence eventually, you know, he admits that he enjoys killing. Like, he doesn't like that he enjoys killing, and he becomes kind of a you know, a crazed war leader in a sense, mm-hmm. and gets to a point where he thinks he can do no wrong, to the point where he walks into a Turkish village pretending to be Arabian and assuming he can get away with it, yeah. which he can't because he's the palest guy in the world.
Blue-eyed, white skin.
He's the palest man in the world. So, and that's kind of his breaking point where he's like, oh, I can, I'm not infallible, I'm not amazing. And then mm-hmm. he kind of wants to leave Arabia, ends up doing one last, I guess, mission for a rallying of the Arabian tribes to meet, you know, at a certain city where they can kind of win the war. And is it Jerusalem? I can't remember if it's Jerusalem. But yeah, and so they meet at this final city with the British troops. And it's kind of where it ends. And I have something to talk about the ending. I think it ends in a weird place. We can or can't talk about it right. Well, let's talk about it right now. So throughout the movie, they mention this treaty that's going on, the like Paris, something where someone from Paris and someone from England like got together and they're gonna write up this treaty on who gets what countries after mm-hmm. World War One. They mention it multiple times through the movie, and they don't talk about it again. Like, he just leaves Arabia. The movie literally leaves with him in a car, in a truck leaving Arabia. And I feel like it's a weird place to end it because they allude to this treaty and then they don't talk about it. And it turns out another movie was made that stars Ralph Fiennes as Lawrence.
I saw that. Yeah, what's it called? A Dangerous Man, Lawrence After Arabia.
So that's kind of, it's a pseudo sequel to this, and that's where I think this movie probably should have ended. And I'm not saying make it longer, there's probably some stuff you could cut out. Mm-hmm. But that's basically Lawrence and Faisal going to this meeting I'm talking about, arguing for the fact that Arabia should be its own country.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it doesn't. I think it falls under British control. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's where the movie should have ended. I feel like a theme through this movie was Arabia trying to win its freedom back. And the whole point was Faisal and the Arabians were talking to Lawrence like, we're going to get our country in the end, right? And he kept telling them, yeah, British, like they have no interest in Arabia, blah, blah, blah. And then it just kind of ends. And I'm like, well, it should end there.
Yeah.
So I always thought, I didn't realize it till the last time we watched it, but I thought that that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, what are your overall thoughts on the movie? What'd you think? Is what, the second or third time you've seen it?
Yeah, second time all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces of it a separate time too, but
Paris Peace Conference is what I was trying to think of. There we go.
You know me, I don't pay attention too much to the political discussion, so.
Get the politics out of here. I'm sorry to get political with these politics from World War One.
But no, overall, I think it's really enjoyable. It's a really good movie. But like we said a little bit earlier, I think the height of the movie, the height of the interest for me is when they attack Aqaba, and some of the stuff afterwards, it just, it's just a little slow.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's bad, but for me, it's just, I lose my interest a little bit.
Do you think a casual movie fan could watch this and enjoy it?
I think so.
Okay.
I do.
I don't necessarily think so.
I think he's an interesting person. Like, one thing I know, like, so this is, like, a long, sweeping epic, and it's this very serious story, but, like, Lawrence is a weird guy. Like, he's goofy. Like,
yeah, you said, in this movie, for sure. They kind
of wanted him out of there. Like, there's some funny stuff that happens in here.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, one thing I think of is when he and one of the guys finally make it all the way back to Cairo, and they go in, and they're just, like, completely covered in sand and dust, and they just, like, walk up to the bar, and the, like, Arab boy that he's got with him, he's like, oh, get him a drink, and the kid just totally slams this lemonade, and he's like, oh, I think he likes your lemonade.
Right.
You know, yeah. And it's just, like, offhanded comments like that are kind of funny. There's more in the beginning.
Yeah.
Are kind of what I think of first, but I don't know. I think it's interesting.
And he's, like, dancing when he gets the, what's it called? The,
like, when he gets the robes on.
Yeah.
I don't remember the actual word for it, but.
But yeah, he did, which was an ad-lib scene. David Lean was, I need space to fill here. So he gave Peter O'Toole, who was this was his first feature film.
That and blew me away.
Yeah, which, like, I got.
The opening credits say, introducing Peter O'Toole. Yeah. I'm like, what?
Yeah, really? Which I got a story on how he got it. But he was a play actor at the time. So David Lean just kind of gave him this setting of this giant dune in the background. But, you know, here's your stage. I need a minute. And so that's when, completely ad-lib, Peter O'Toole takes a knife out, looks at his reflection in the knife, and starts, like, dancing around, pretending he's a plane or something weird like that.
Yeah.
Because David Lean was just like, act how.
He looks like a kid, like the way he's, like, twirling his arms around. Yeah, and
that was. That was the point. David was like, just do what any, you think normal, like, not normal, but, like, any non-Arab person would do if they wore these for the first time. So mm-hmm. That's what he did. So ad-libbed. But yeah, I don't know. I guess the reason I don't think a casual movie fan would, they would maybe find this enjoyable, but the reason I'm hesitant is because, one, it's so long.
It's so long. Just stop at Aqaba.
You could. The intermission. Just stop at the intermission. Which, I love a good intermission movie. This one's obviously up there.
One of them, yeah.
But, I don't know. It's just, there's just, it's just so long and ongoing. And a lot of the shots, like, I think what makes this movie is the setting. And,
yeah.
You know, more so than, I know they redid the dialogue. I don't think the dialogue is what makes this movie. It's the, it's the epicness, the shots of it, which I think a casual fan could appreciate, but that's not what casual movie fans go to a movie to see. So if the highlight of the movie is these long, like, shots of just the landscape, and there's not enough interesting things happening in the movie, I think they could get lost. I mean, I recommend it because it is a classic, but I always ask myself, would a casual person enjoy this? And I guess it could go either way. I think there are definitely other Best Picture winners where I'd be like, no, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And ones that would be an absolute yes. This one's close. I could see it going either way. But I guess I just wanted to say that. So, you talked about, what do you think as Peter O'Toole as Lawrence? What do you think of his performance?
He's really good.
Yeah, he is good.
I don't know if I can say much more besides that. He's good.
That's a great critique. We'll leave it at that. Yep. Put it on the DVD case.
He's
really good. Haley Schmidt.
Good. Yep.
The story behind him getting the role was, so originally they wanted Marlon Brando or Albert Finney, who at the time, Albert Finney was an unknown. He's the guy that played Tom Jones.
Yep.
Basically, I think the next year, maybe the next year or two, came out a year or two after this.
Yeah.
Anyways, they both of those fell through. And Peter O'Toole was working on stage plays, and he was preparing himself to be the next great Shakespearean actor, and he didn't have any plans for film. That's when David Lean called, and what had happened was Lean was married to an Indian woman at the time, who had a guru, and that guru went to see a film called The Day They Robbed the Bank of England, which Peter O'Toole had a small uncredited, apparently, because Lawrence of Arabia is his first feature film.
Yeah.
So this must have been, I can try to look it up, an uncredited role. But anyways, he had a small role in that movie, and this guru apparently just went up to David Lean and was like, I found Lawrence of Arabia. Because after Finney and Brando fell through, it was kind of like, who's going to be, like, this was going to be a big film, right? Like, David Lean was an Academy Award winner. This was being billed as his grand epic, and it was a big deal. Like, who is going to play T.E. Lawrence, right? And this was 30 years after he had died, so not that far from the real life T.E. Lawrence dying, so he was probably more well known. And so, yeah, he watched the movie. David Lean watched, like, this movie that this guru went to see. Okay. And called up Peter O'Toole, met with him, apparently just put a pile of sand in the middle of a state, like a room, and was like, put these robes on and stand there. Now put this uniform on and stand there.
Yeah.
And, like, that was it. And was basically, yeah, I want you to be Lawrence of Arabia. Which, like, great. And apparently O'Toole was, well, let me see the script. Like, he's a stage actor, so he's big on dialogue. Yeah. He goes, let me read the script. And he read it. Apparently told David Lean, this is the greatest adventure film of all time.
Oh.
Which David Lean goes, that bad, huh? Because, like, that means, like, not great dialogue, right? Oh, it's dialogue isn't why this is going to be a good movie.
I was saying, when you said adventure, I'm like, oh, it's probably not. Well, it wasn't the word I was expecting, so it makes sense that David Lean wasn't necessarily happy with how it was described.
Yep, so after that, David Lean asked Peter O'Toole, well, who are the great playwrights right now? And that's Peter O'Toole knew Robert Bolt.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave him Robert Bolt's name. Next thing O'Toole knew, Robert Bolt was redoing the draft. So Michael Wilson got kicked off, and then Robert Bolt started writing the script and wrote all the dialogue and even has a cameo in the movie. So, yeah, that's how Peter O'Toole got the role. And last thing, so Sam Spiegel was a producer on this film, who was probably the biggest producer in film at the time.
Okay.
And he didn't like Peter O'Toole, and the only thing I could find on this was Peter O'Toole in an interview said that he pulled a stunt on him. And I wanted to figure out what that stunt was. I couldn't find anything, but I'm really, because O'Toole, I think, has some cases of, like, getting a little too drunk and doing stuff. So I'm wondering if he did anything.
Yeah, happened on the set, too. I need to find the story. But, I think I was reading about all the injuries that Peter O'Toole suffered during filming. And some of it had to do with, like, the actual production of the film. But one of the instances was, he got drunk and, like, got a concussion or something because he fell over drunk. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was.
So I'm wondering if he did something to him, like, drunkenly at a party, but I couldn't find anything. But anyways, David Lean, basically, once he gets something set in his mind, he's very much, like, set in his ways, and this is what's going to happen. So I guess he got Spiegel to eventually agree to Peter O'Toole, and the rest is history, you know. God, I mean, this is one of the greatest roles of all time, right? And he didn't win the Oscar, and we can get into that later, but I always feel like whenever I'm talking to anyone who knows anything about, obviously, 60s films or anything like that, but when I say, Peter O'Toole did not win an Oscar for Lawrence of Arabia, it's usually outrage.
This gets me every time, yes.
Usually.
Like, what? How did he not win?
Exactly, and then it's, well, who won? And it's maybe the greatest performance in the history of film. So, in, you know, Gregory Peck for To Kill a Mockingbird, which, you know, we can get to later. But I think he's good in the role. He's definitely a little, I don't know, flamboyant might not be the right term. But egotistical, whimsical, childish, like all these things rolled into one. So it's a good performance. Lawrence as a person in this movie kind of sucks, though, right? Like, what do you think of him as a person?
Yeah, a bit.
Like, he is egotistical. He thinks he's infallible. He gets like everyone he knows killed, both the kids that are his, you know, he hangs his neck out for them. Like, no, they're fine. I'm going to pay him a shilling each a week or whatever. They both end up dying. And yeah, I don't like we mentioned before, he ends up killing and says he enjoys it. Like, I don't know. He's not the most likable character and meaningful, like it's meant to be that way.
Yeah, and I think one example, too, is when, it's, like, after Aqaba, he's, like, working to destroy, like, the Turkish railways again to try and help the Arabs. And in one of the, like, explosions that they set off on the tracks where it blows up, like, the civilian train cars, like, he climbs up to the top of one of these train cars that's, like, toppled over, and he just stands there with his arms out, kind of like, look at me, look what I've done, and you're like, look at all these people, like, in peril around you. And that's actually when someone shoots him. And I think in that moment, he's kind of like, oh. Like, that's another moment where he's like, okay, maybe I'm not completely, like, immortal, more or less. So, not the best guy. But I found Peter O'Toole seriously injured his hand during filming while punching a wall while drunk. That was the injury.
It's always a wall. I mean, I get it. It's like easy to punch things, I guess, when you're drunk, but that's what it always is.
Okay, this ties in perfectly, because during the train crash scene, I remember pointing this out to you while we were watching it, because this is when he's, like, up there, and he gets shot, and he goes to, like, grab his gunshot wound. I'm like, it looks like he's got, like, a brace on his thumb or something, or, like, it's wrapped in a bandage. Yeah. It's because his hand was wrapped up because he had busted it up punching a wall.
That's right. I do remember you pointing that out. Yeah. Well, there you go. A drunken fool, typical Brit. Am I right? I don't even know. Are they stereotypical drinkers?
Maybe? I don't know.
Okay.
The fact that I don't know. Let me Google it. It's not a
stereotypically British drinkers. Does that make sense? Revealed British alcoholic stereotype is wrong.
Okay.
All right. So it is a stereotype, but it's not true. Mystery solved. Except for Peter O'Toole, where he is kind of a drunk.
What about Omar Sharif? We want to talk about Omar Sharif.
He is very good. This is his only Oscar nomination, which, call back to our Dr. Zhivago episode, he should have been nominated and probably should have won for that. Another David Lean movie. There you go. So yeah, David Lean went from this to Dr. Zhivago. And I think he had one more film after that, and then it was like 15 years between that and Passage Way to India. But Omar Sharif is great in this.
He's so captivating. Like, I don't know. Like, when he's on screen, like, I don't know if it's, like, his eyes or his face or what, but, like, you just can't help but, like, be drawn into him. Mm-hmm. He's so good.
Oh, he's great. Him and Peter O'Toole, apparently, quick friends on set. I think they both really like to gamble, so I think that's maybe where they...
That's funny. Yeah, you're right. This is only Oscar nomination.
Yeah, in supporting role for playing Ali, obviously. No, he's great. I think this was... I don't know how much he had done before this, but he kind of became, you know, I don't want to say the it guy, but a little bit of a heart-throbby man in the 60s. He did this... Dr. Vago mentioned that when he did the movie with Barbara Streisand, she won her Oscar for that. Funny Girl, I want to say.
Sounds right.
He's, you know, her husband in that movie. So, like, the 60s, Omar Sharif was a pretty big deal. And, yeah, he's great in this. I think he's, what, Egyptian heritage?
Yes.
I think he even went to, like, some ambassador in Egypt to tell them, because they were worried that Lawrence of Arabia is going to be offensive. And he went to them and was like, no, it's good. Don't worry. They saw it and it became like the most popular movie of all time So
crazy looking at his filmography before Lawrence of Arabia. And it's like all Egyptian, all Arab films.
Makes sense. So yeah, he's great in this. He's kind of the moral compass in a way for Lawrence. But he's great. On the flip side, Alec Guinness is in this. A very white British person playing Prince Faisal, Arabian. This isn't going to be the first or last time that he plays a role he probably shouldn't be playing. Like, he's a good actor. He won his Oscar for British on the River Kwai, David Lean movie. He's in most David Lean movies. He's in Dr. Zhivago. And then the crazy one is the last one, which is Passageway to India.
Oh.
Where you, if you have something else, you go ahead and say it.
No, I'm trying to think of who was, who did, oh shoot, is it Hamlet?
Oh, Laurence Olivier.
Laurence Olivier.
That's a crazy one.
Okay, yep.
That's just straight up blackface.
Yeah, it is.
That is a white man putting black something on his body, and it's terrible. But
anyway.
Alec Guinness, he played an Indian, I don't know, like I haven't seen the movie in a while, but he plays like an Indian person, and it looks terrible and is terrible. And here you go, in the 60s, where I guess it was accepted, but still shouldn't have been. He's playing an Arab prince.
Yeah.
Great.
Not great.
No. I mean, I got some trivia here, but anything else about this movie that you had? I had stuff, people liked hitting their horses with sticks, or just things with sticks. Like, Sharif Ali is just always hitting people with his stick.
Mm-hmm.
If Lawrence is shaving with water, what the fuck are you doing? Water is the most... They even say it to him, like, you're wasting water. And he's like, no, I'm fine. Like, no, that's water. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Literally, people die of not drinking that, and you're using it to shave right now. So, yeah. Lawrence reminds me of a kid trying too hard with a new group of friends. Like, he's trying
That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he's with the... Arabians or Arabs. So what's the proper? Which Arabians, Arabs,
yeah.
either or?
I like either.
Okay. I do like the gray area. Like, the movie doesn't just depict Lawrence as a good guy or bad guy. It's somewhere in between, which I appreciate. A lot of movies I feel like would just be like, no, he's a good guy and misunderstood, or he's a bad guy for whatever reason. But this is like a true, you could debate on whether you think Lawrence was a good person or not. So it leans towards hero, but I kind of appreciate that it hangs in that gray area a little bit.
Proper term is Arab.
Okay. Arab. Good to know. Thank you. I do like some of what Lawrence does. He isn't a complete bad person. Like, I like when he doesn't accept that people's fates are written, so he goes back into the desert to save that guy. And then successfully does it. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And it's kind of maybe a little ego boost for him. Like, yeah, I can do whatever I want. But then I like that it's matched with, well, no, Lawrence had to kill that guy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, maybe some fates are destined. But I kind of like that you got both ends of it there. I also had here, imagine if this movie was remade. Do you think they'd do it on set like this? Or would it just be like a CG desert, or would it just be Dune?
Right.
But I just had that there. Like, some movies I don't think are meant to be remade. This one probably shouldn't be, but it just popped in my head. Like, would they actually go on location these days? Probably not. Want to save money?
Yeah, that's true. It depends on, because wasn't Mad Max Fury Road was done like
mostly practical. That was like amazing that it happened.
Yeah.
People were amazed by that. So I just feel like it's not that common.
It would depend on who wanted to do it. But also, what would you do in a remake that would reinvent anything that was
No,
done?
It wouldn't.
You
I
know?
Just a lot of people are remaking movies.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's a valid question.
I'm not saying...
For me, I'm trying to think, like, if you were to try and reinvent Lawrence of Arabia, what would you do to actually make it different?
Yeah. Well, you could dive in. There are rumors that he was bisexual.
Okay.
Which is, like, there's one scene in this movie where maybe you can read into it. Apparently, it's more, I don't want to say explored, but in that Ralph Fiennes movie, apparently.
Oh, okay.
It's a little more prevalent, I guess.
Okay,
but,
interesting.
But no, I'm not saying it should be remade or anything, but
yeah,
just watching this movie, I went, these like wide shots of the sand dunes in the sky are amazing.
Yeah.
Could anything like this be made today?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, probably not, because Dune would probably, not to get, you know, we'll probably review Dune at some point, but not to get too ahead of ourselves, but Dune would have probably been the best opportunity to do that. And I feel like most of that is CG.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's
real,
but...
A couple trivia things here.
Trivia.
Lawrence of Arabia.
That actually worked pretty good.
Right? That's pretty good.
How long did it take you to come up with that?
On the spot, right here and now.
Okay, even better.
I know. Almost all movement in this film goes from left to right. Director David Lean said he did this to emphasize that this movie was a journey. What do you think of that?
Emphasize the journey. I don't think you need that in order to emphasize the journey, but that's okay.
Okay.
I mean, you do notice it. You do kind of feel like this guy's just like going forever.
Because this has an intermission. Last movie, according to Google, that had an intermission, 2003's Civil War film, Gods and Generals.
Oh.
Which is like a pseudo-sequel to Gettysburg, I want to say. I think you pointed this out while filming it, but the night scenes were just filmed in the day and then they put a filter on it. I mean, not much you could do with that probably during the time. So it is what it is. On AFI's...
That's something you could reinvent in a remake.
That's not worth it.
Nope.
So AFI's top 100, like they have those rankings. This is number one under the epic film genre.
Okay.
Number two is Ben-Hur. Number three, Schindler's List.
I was going to say, where's Ben-Hur?
Which are the two that we named earlier. Number three is Schindler's List. Four, Gone with the Wind. Five, Spartacus. Six, Titanic. Seven, All Quiet on the Western Front. Eight, Saving Private Ryan, which I don't always think of as an epic, but there you go.
It's a journey type film, though.
It is. No, you're right.
From that standpoint.
Nine is Reds, and ten is the Ten Commandments.
Ten Commandments.
Yeah. You want to do real justice?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do that.
So, I think clear-cut runner-up, I guess, for best picture in 1962 was To Kill a Mockingbird. And let me just quickly run through the other nominees.
Best picture nominees?
Yes. Because I think, wasn't one of them Music Man? Didn't I point that out?
Yes.
Oh, no, it wasn't. Sorry. Lawrence of Arabia.
But it came out that year.
It came out that year. Music Man came out that year. Yeah. So, yeah. Winner, Lawrence of Arabia. Longest Day. Meredith Wilson's The Music Man. I lied. It was nominated for Best Picture. I was just looking for The Music Man, but the whole Meredith Wilson's in front threw me off.
It's like Lee Daniels, the butler.
There we go. Mutiny on the Bounty, and then To Kill a Mockingbird. So I think Longest Day gets a lot of good praise, probably just because it's a war movie, but To Kill a Mockingbird, clear cut, runner-up, based on the classic book, obviously.
Harper Lee.
Yep. And yeah, stars Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch, Scout, but Jem. Like, I don't need to explain To Kill a Mockingbird. It's a classic book, classic film. What do you think? What should have won Best Picture? We'll talk about it broadly. We'll make sure to touch on like the five criteria that we normally do in, you know, technical, music, writing, acting, and just best. But what do you think should have won Best Picture in 1962?
Oh, you can't put me on the spot like that.
Oh my God. Okay. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. I do think To Kill a Mockingbird should have won. I just like it. Like, I just think it's better. It's more digestible. It's got a better message behind it. If you want to go at it from that angle. So, like, technically speaking, yeah, of course, Lawrence of Arabia is better. Like, the sweeping landscapes, the extras, the props, the costumes, all that stuff.
Like, the whole production.
The production of it, yes, of course. Like, it's billed as an epic. That's what it's going to be good at. Yes, Lawrence of Arabia is better than that. Music, you could say Lawrence of Arabia's got, like, a more memorable theme to it. While To Kill a Mockingbird is still pretty good, though. Writing, it's got to be To Kill a Mockingbird. It's just better dialogue. It's a better story, in my opinion. I guess story, it's close. Because you got this epic journey of this man, bringing Arabs together. All this, I was going to say all this jazz, but I feel like that's degrading what this movie's about. But, you know, it, like, maybe the stories are split on which one's better, but the dialogue is definitely better in To Kill a Mockingbird. The acting, I think, is better in To Kill a Mockingbird. I know it's kind of headed by Gregory Peck, but that's just how good he is. Like, Lawrence of Arabia has good acting, obviously. Peter O'Toole, Omar Sharif. Other than that, it's just a bunch of guys doing things. There isn't anything too stand out about it. There's people I like Jack Hawkins shows up in it, and he's good, and Claude Rains is in it, and he's good, but, like, none of them are big enough roles to really, like, sway me one way or other, but Gregory Peck is just so good as Atticus Finch, and even the kid actors are really good in that movie.
They really are.
Like, they're just good. I think the girl who played Scout got nominated for supporting actress, which is awesome. But I just think overall, To Kill a Mockingbird is a better movie. It's got so many things. Like, it's just, like, I just love that it takes place in this little neighborhood, and it's like this comforting story about, like, it's the point of view of these kids, which isn't always a good thing in movies, but I like that this is from the point of view of kids, and it's kind of just them playing around in this neighborhood, and you get to know all the neighbors, so you kind of know whose yard they're going into and this and that. And it's a little bit of a courtroom drama too. And then it's just, yeah, I don't know. And then it's just, you got Atticus Finch at the head of it, and he's just really good in this movie. So I do, I just think To Kill a Mockingbird is better. And I think in a time, like in the 60s, it makes sense for Lawrence of Arabia to win Best Picture. They were big on these big scoping epics. Like I said, Ben-Hur had won 3 years before. West Side Story won the year before, which is kind of a longer film, big production. Like, at this time, big production, like, big films were winning the big Oscars. If these movies came out this year, I think To Kill a Mockingbird would probably win.
I think that's an interesting perspective. I would probably agree with you.
Yeah, it kind of reminds, it's kind of, what was it? A couple of years ago, Spotlight won over The Revenant.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, I think of To Kill a Mockingbird as this, like, smaller but more emotionally, like, engaging movie. Like, it's more important, big message behind it. Mm-hmm. Like, that would win Best Picture over, like, The Revenant or Lawrence of Arabia, where it's more,
watch this guy travel across the land.
Yeah, and, like, Leo won the Oscar for that, but, like, no one agrees that that was Leo's best performance. So it's more like, here's your Oscar. But, yeah, like, that's kind of how I would view it. Like, I think To Kill a Mockingbird would probably win. She's yawning! She's yawning!
This old lady is tired. I was trying not to yawn.
So your thoughts?
Wow, I think you did a really good job of laying that out. Like, your reasoning for To Kill a Mockingbird.
Do you agree? What do you think? You don't have to agree with me, obviously.
I know. But I think for the large part, I do agree that To Kill a Mockingbird is a better movie. It's, you know, if we talk about casual moviegoer, I think To Kill a Mockingbird, I don't know why I can't say that. So, yeah, for the casual moviegoer, I think it's a more digestible film.
Yeah, I do. I think of, yeah, like what you said, I think a casual viewer would like To Kill a Mockingbird more.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't the final, like, how you should judge it.
No.
You know what I mean? But I think it's worth noting.
We can talk about two heavy hitter movies.
No, they're both amazing. We can go over scores in a second, but, like, these are both amazing movies. Yeah. It is very tough to judge it.
But it's, I loved the perspective from the kids. Like, at first I was kind of thinking about, okay, like, Lawrence of Arabia, it's all about Peter O'Toole as Lawrence. And To Kill a Mockingbird, like, you think of Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch. But really, like, it's so much more about the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And them.
It's their innocent eyes, right?
They drive the story. And he's there to, like, teach them lessons along the way.
Yeah, or it's like you're viewing, like, they're kids, they're innocent, and it's them viewing, like, why are you treating this guy different because of his skin color? That's kind of dumb. What do you mean? You know, it's like you're viewing this kind of racist world at least during the courtroom and like that whole section of the movie, but like through the eyes of these innocent kids, or like how they treat Boo Radley.
I would say there's so many social issues that they get to in this movie with, like Boo Radley, he's supposedly like violent or he's got mental illness, and they don't necessarily use those words. Part of it is the kids probably can't find the right words, but also I think that language just wasn't really used back then. But they talk about that, and they've got the drunken guy, I can't remember his name, and there's racist overtones, and there's rape, and all of this stuff, and it's, you're seeing all this stuff through the kids' eyes, and it really is amazing how, like, naive they are about a lot of things, but it makes them, like, more accepting of things at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, they're very impressionable, and, like, thankfully Atticus is there to teach them things, or they're actually brave enough to do certain things, or like be in a certain situation where it's like, oh, okay, we're kind of learning this for ourselves, that maybe we're hearing one thing from someone, but we're kind of learning stuff for ourselves too. So
yeah, and I do have something about, so you mentioned Boo Radley. So was that stuff real? Like they said, like he stabbed his dad with scissors and just kept cutting paper. Is that stuff real? Because, like, adults are claiming it to be real. Why would they lie about it unless it's just they're caught up in the hysteria of it? But I was like, is that stuff real? These adults making it up to scare the kids? Yeah. Because, like, Dill is coming up with these.
I think it's one of those, like, urban legend type things that people keep sharing, like, stories about. Just because no one's taking the time to actually get to know him or his family. It's just like the story that keeps getting passed around. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, he did this. He did this. Oh, did you hear about Boo Radley? Yeah, this is the kind of person he is. Yeah. No one actually knows him, so it's easy to spread that stuff if it's not true.
Rumor mill. Mm-hmm. I also have written here, no thank you, crazy old lady. You know who I'm talking about?
The old lady in her wheelchair on the front porch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just yelling at the kids.
You're crazy. You address me as ma'am. Was that what she was saying, right?
Oh, I don't know. It was just, I think that was the first crazy
thing she said. And Atticus is like, oh, wow, you have such a lovely garden. And Jem's like, yeah, dad just says nice things to her to distract her from saying any mean things to us.
Mm-hmm. So this movie is number one. To Kill a Mockingbird is number one on the same AFI top tens. For courtroom dramas, do you consider this a courtroom drama? Because I don't think I do. I don't know. Courtroom drama to me is the whole movie is about the case, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like number two is 12 Angry Men. Number three, I wouldn't even count number three as a courtroom drama. Kramer versus Kramer. I
was looking at this list before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number three is Kramer versus Kramer, which I don't really consider courtroom. No. It's like, it's a father, son.
But I think this is part of it. AFI defines courtroom drama as like the storyline, like most of the story takes place in a court, or it's the driving
factor. It's a critical role in the film's narrative.
Yeah.
Which,
so you can't argue against it being a critical role, but I think you're almost short selling it by saying it's a courtroom drama.
Yeah. And the problem is, not problem, my thing with it too is the whole point of that scene in To Kill a Mockingbird is the decision was predetermined.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way Atticus can win the case.
No.
In fact, I thought it was in the movie, but it must be in the book, because I remember this. But the jury's out for 2 hours, and they come back, rule him guilty.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember. I didn't take any notes on this as we watched it. It was one of those where it's, like, I was just so, like, caught up in it. I never stopped to take a note.
Right. Well, yeah, that's a good sign of
How good it
is. Tom Robinson. 2 hours, the jury is out, and then they rule Tom Robinson guilty. Even though he's clearly not. Like, basically all Atticus had to do was say, the doctor says she was hit by someone with their left hand.
Yeah.
And Tom Robinson cannot use his left hand. That's literally all he would need to say. And he should be innocent. But I remember in the book, because the kids, another thing, the kids are viewing the world like through these innocent eyes. Like, they're upstairs with African-Americans watching this trial, not down below, you know, with
most of the white people are. Yep.
But I remember the reverend or whomever they're sitting next to says something to the effect of, like, the kids are upset that Atticus lost, and the reverend says something to the effect of, yeah, but he's the only man in this county that could have kept that jury out for 2 hours. So I kind of wish that would have been in the movie. I don't remember it being in there when we rewatched it, but I just don't, because the verdict was basically predetermined, there's no drama around the court case. Like, I just don't picture, I guess my thing is, like, I just don't view this as a courtroom drama. I guess that's all I'm trying to say. Like, A Few Good Men's number 5, The Verdict's number 4. Those are both fantastic courtroom drama movies, and I don't know, more so what I think of.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Atticus Finch is number 1. Yeah, he is on the AFI's hero list.
Ooh.
So they rank 100 heroes, 100 villains. 50 heroes. It's 100 total. 50 heroes, 50 villains, and they have Atticus Finch as number 1.
That's nice.
Which is kind of interesting, because
Number
2 and 3 are more along the, probably what you'd think of. Any guesses? Big time franchises. One just,
like, superhero?
No, because this was made kind of in the, it was redone in the early 2000s, so superhero movies weren't, they were a thing, but definitely not what they were.
Like, I don't know, Superman.
A movie just,
Superman's a long-going franchise.
A movie just came out with one of these characters, long-running franchise, and then there's one being made right now.
James Bond.
Number 3. Number 2 is Indiana Jones.
Oh, okay. Indiana Jones was a hero. Okay.
And he's killing Nazis. What's more heroic than that?
To Kill a Mockingbird is, you know, we're talking whether Lawrence of Arabia is the top 250. To Kill a Mockingbird is. It's number 120.
Oh, good to know.
On IMDb's list. It's also an 8.3. Lawrence of Arabia was an 8.3 as well.
Lawrence of Arabia is 102. And then To Kill a Mockingbird was what?
120.
Oh, okay, so Lawrence higher. Is higher. Yep. Same score, but... So wait, did you give an answer? You didn't give me an answer, did you? On To Kill a Mockingbird? Which should have won Best Picture?
Yeah, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
I'll co-sign that.
All right. Last note, box office. Number 1 was Longest Day. Number 2, Lawrence of Arabia. Number 3, The Music Man. And then number 6 was To Kill a Mockingbird.
That's how it performed at the box office?
Yep.
Okay.
In the U.S. at least. So scores. What scores would you give each one of these?
So I'm giving Lawrence of Arabia an 8.5. And To Kill a Mockingbird an 8.7.
All right. Pretty close.
Edges it out. Yeah.
So I gave To Kill a Mockingbird a 9.7. And then
we're back to our, like, typical, like, oh, you're usually a point higher than my score.
Very true. And then Lawrence of Arabia, 9.4.
Okay.
So both in the nines, both very, very good. And yeah, I don't think we talked, like, Gregory Peck is just amazing as Atticus Finch.
He's so good.
It's,
don't you just want him to be in your life? Right. Like, I want Atticus Finch.
Right. Bad luck for Peter O'Toole. Just losing out to maybe one of the best performances of all time. All right. My last notes for the year, 1962. Just really quick, some other movies.
I thought you meant for, like, 2021.
2021. Last. No. No.
Is it 2021? I had to, like, second guess myself for a second.
To Kill a Mockingbird, Lawrence of Arabia. Also, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. One of my dad's all-time favorites.
I've watched that with my dad.
There you go. It's a dad movie. I have to start liking this movie now. I'm a dad. The Miracle Worker, which was not nominated for Best Picture, but Patty Duke and Bancroft, I think is her name, won Oscars for playing... Anne Sullivan, and then I remember the less popular name, and Helen Keller. They both won, but that movie, oddly enough, was not nominated for Best Picture. Longest Day, I mentioned. The first Bond movie in the Bond universe came out in Dr. No, the first Sean Connery one. Because Casino Royale came out a couple years before, but it it's not part of the Bond universe for some reason. I don't exactly know why, but the first Cape Fear before Martin Scorsese remade it in 1990, and then the original Manchurian Candidate also came out that year. So those are kind of The Music Man, we mentioned that, among others. So yeah, there you go, 1962 in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
All right, time for our final segment of the day, a little callback to our earlier episodes. A little 6 degrees. So this is something we play it like on long road trips to keep ourselves awake. We pick a couple movies or actors and then connect them. Okay, so Lawrence of Arabia can be one of them. And then the other one, I'll let you pick, because I did a randomizer for two. Star Wars Episode 3 or Serenity?
Serenity.
All right. Do you want to do actors or movies?
What do I usually do better at?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember. I haven't done it for a little while.
I'll do actors.
Okay. Then I guess I'll just pick the movie. We'll just start with Lawrence of Arabia. Like, it's older. I feel like it's better to start with the older
one. Yeah. Let's start there.
So, did you say you want to do movies? I'm sorry?
No, I'm doing the actors.
Okay, so Lawrence of Arabia, go.
Yeah. Peter O'Toole.
Peter O'Toole.
The man, the Lawrence of the Arabia.
Correct. Let's see. He's done a lot. I'm trying to think of something a little more recent. Oh, he's in the movie Troy.
Oh.
Well, I don't want to give any picks away. I was going to say. Now it's your turn.
The only person that I know that's in that is Brad Pitt.
Bradley Pitt? Is that his real name?
Probably not.
William Bradley Pitt. There you go.
He could be Bill. Bill Pitt.
Bill Pitt. Oh, that sounds bad. Awful. Well, Brad Pitt's so huge. I feel like this is going to be short.
It is what it is, right, babe?
No, yeah. I'm just trying to think.
What's the first movie you think of? Just
Ocean's 11.
Ooh, Ocean's 11. That's a big one. Ooh, I'll go... Wait, he's not actually credited. Does it have to be a credited role? Because isn't Cheadle not even credited in it?
Especially for that. No, we're fine.
But yeah, that's what I'm going to say. Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle. Ba-ba-ba.
I had no idea Peter O'Toole was in Troy.
Yeah, I think he's Helen's dad? He's like the leader of... I haven't seen that movie in forever. But, like, what's the name of the city they're trying... Is it... Because it isn't Troy that they're trying to, like, break into. Because the Trojans are the one attacking, right? Yeah. Anyways. You said Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
Infinity War. Avengers, obviously. I just thought of a way to make it shorter. But oh well.
I'm gonna say Chadwick Boseman.
Good old Chadwick. I'll say 42.
42. The only other person I can think of from that is Harrison Ford.
He is in that. Yep.
Harrison Ford.
Okay.
Oh, if we did Star Wars, we'd be done.
He's not in Episode 3, though.
Oh, that, yeah. That it was Episode 3. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I did think...
I was thinking Return of the Jedi, but you're right. You said Episode 3.
Yeah. I get why you'd think that, though. The third one released. Star Wars is fun, right? The third one released is Episode 6.
Yep.
Was he in an Expendables movie? I don't know exactly which one, so I probably can't pick that.
I didn't think so, but...
I think he's in... I
have no idea.
I think he's in one of the sequels, but because I don't know for sure, I don't think I can pick it. We'll go Blade Runner 2049.
Then I'll say Ryan Gosling.
No crazy Jared Leto or Robin Wright Penn. Not Penn anymore, Robin Wright you want to go with for that?
I didn't know they were in it.
Have you seen that movie?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Jared Leto's like the bad guy in it. Shocker. We will go with Crazy Stupid Love.
Ooh, I love that movie. Ooh, so many choices.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm going to say Emma Stone. Oh, I thought of a path we could have used Infinity War.
I've thought of two that we could have done. We can say them after, though. That's half the fun for me, like going back and be like, oh, this is where we could have had it.
There's only a few people from Serenity that I know, so I'm trying to think of what other stuff they've been in.
I know. I can think of a couple. Oddly enough, I haven't been thinking about the main guy that much. I should.
I don't know what other movies he's been in.
I know. TV shows. He's been in TV shows. Yeah. He's at Emma Stone. Superbad?
Superbad. I'll say Seth Rogen.
Okay.
I mean, sorry, Jonah Hill.
They are. It's funny.
You know, they're both in it, but well, what I meant is...
Jonah Hill plays Seth Rogen, like essentially.
And I think that's
like,
why. It's
like, I know. Right? They're kind of fat, like bigger guys with curly hair.
Yeah. Is that okay that I say Jonah Hill?
Yeah. You say whatever you want to say. Jonah Hill.
Your eyes are darting back and forth, like when people have really dramatic scenes in movies.
Oh no.
And they're looking at someone, and their eyes just go back and forth. Like, What are you telling me?
This is me just trying to think.
I know.
What am I trying to say? The Wolf of Wall Street?
Okay. Because I think I can still use that in a path.
Okay.
Especially if I say Leo.
Catch Me If You Can.
I'm trying to think who plays his dad. Just because I'm trying to think of, like, different characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you automatically think of Tom Hanks, but it's like, is it more helpful to go with someone different? Who else is in it?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say Amy Adams.
Okay. I'll say Justice League.
Justice League. Okay. Wait, the Snyder Cut or... Just kidding.
Whichever one you want to go with.
I'll say Gal Gadot.
Batman v Superman.
Ben Affleck.
Good Will Hunting.
Matt Damon.
Saving Private Ryan. Which I guess we could have gotten there. When you said Gal Gadot, I could have just said like a Fast and Furious movie. Because Vin Diesel's in Saving Private Ryan.
Oh. Huh. Nathan Fillion.
Yes, he is in Saving Private Ryan. Yes. He plays the first Private Ryan from Minnesota.
Yeah. That's right.
That they find and tell his siblings are dead.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, oh, they're grammar school. It's Nathan Fillion. That's my Nathan Fillion impression.
Oh, okay.
So I guess I should say Serenity.
Yes, close it out.
But yeah, there you go. There were a couple times. So when you said Brad Pitt, I should have said 12 Years a Slave.
And I could have said Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, who's in Serenity. That would have made this like a 3-movie game. Yeah. And then there was another time I wanted you to say Tom Hanks.
In Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get to Saving Private Ryan.
Sure.
And then...
Well, and I had thought of when we got to Jonah Hill.
Okay.
You could have said, "Don't Look Up."
Yeah, I didn't know
what I was saying. And I could have said Jennifer Lawrence. You could have gotten Michael Fassbender from X-Men. And we could have gotten to 12 Years a Slave, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Okay, yeah. And then the last one.
I was also trying to figure out how to get to, like, a comedy to get to Alan Tudyk.
And so Alan Tudyk was the last one I thought of. Yeah. Oddly enough, not a comedy, though. But when I said 42...
Uh-huh.
You could have just said Alan Tudyk.
No way!
Because he plays the racist manager for the Reds. In that one.
Oh, so that's what's kind of fun about this game.
That's why I like it. Like, yeah, it can go on forever, but then you can talk about, like, where you could have shortened it up, you know?
Yeah, that's funny. Because I was trying to think, because the first thing that I always think of him from is Dodgeball. He plays Steve the Pirate.
Yeah. And yeah, that I mean, that's Vince Vaughn. That's a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Long.
Yeah.
People you could work to there. Yeah, Alan Tudyk and
he's actually done a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Alan Tudyk
and Chiwetel are the two that I kept trying to think of.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't know Nathan Fillion's filmography that well. But then when I was on, I don't know, what was I on when I said, oh yeah, Leo.
When you were on Leo.
I went, oh, Nathan Fillion's in Saving Private Ryan.
That's so funny.
So yeah, we eventually got there, but yeah, it's I just don't. And then
there you go, folks. That's how you get from Peter O'Toole to Serenity.
That's one way to do it. I'm sure there's a lot of different ways.
Yep.
Because I was also trying to think of how to get to Benedict Cumberbatch. That's why I kept. That's why I said Infinity War.
Oh, okay. Because
Benedict Cumberbatch is in 12 Years a Slave. He plays his first master, who's still a terrible person because he owns slaves, but not as bad. Like, he's trying to help Chiwetel out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of different things you could do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go. So, that's today's episode. Let us know what you think. Leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And Spotify just started doing ratings, so leave us a rating in Spotify as well. Haley, did you want to let them know what our social media tags are?
Sorry,
that's it. That it's coffee noises. That's what our tags are. Yep.
Twitter and Instagram at Oscar Real Pod. Cast. Cool. I don't remember.
It's just Pod.
Isn't that bad? That's why I thought it was Pod.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, as soon as you say it out loud, you're like, oh my God, is that even right? At Oscar Real Pod.
Exactly. So you can reach us there, as you said, on Twitter and Instagram. That is today's show. This has been your host, Matt Schmidt.
And Haley Schmidt.
We'll see you next time.